which is, you know, I've been, before I moved to Summit, I spent the last 6 years working primarily on drought tolerance in rice. And phenology in rice is an important impediment to understanding variation in the genetic control of variation for drought tolerance. So I'm going to discuss work on identifying individual QTLs that seem to have large effects on drought tolerance. This work is being primarily done by Venu Ramaya, Arvind Kumar, Jerome Bernier at Erie, and I'll be reporting some work done by Ravindra Kumar, who's at a state agricultural university in Meerut, north of New Delhi. Drought tolerance, drought is a major issue in the lowland target populations of environments in Asia, particularly in the upper fields in the Tohoku sequence. There are about 10 million hectares, more or less, of such fields in Asia. For instance, these are fields in Chhattisgarh in eastern India that were severely drought affected in 2002. And these upper fields can dry out very early in the season if the monsoon withdraws early. And if the paddies don't fill, they will never get sown or transplanted. We usually think of rice of drought as being physical water shortage resulting in plant stress. But in rice, drought also often means a lack of standing water that impedes critical management operations. This is a weed management operation very common in eastern India, where in direct seeded systems, it's called biasi or bushening, where farmers will plow up and then almost retransplant a recently seeded crop, and the rice seedlings are able to handle this much better than most weeds. But for the most part, I'll be talking about genes that are associated with tolerance to physical water shortage. This is not only important in lowland systems, but in the less common upland and aerobic systems, where off the top of my head, I would say that there's now about 7 million hectares of such systems in Asia, where rice is grown in unbunded, unpuddled fields. And there's a big push on to intensify management to move from this type of situation, and for instance in the Lao or Yunnan uplands, to this type of situation with better varieties, higher fertility. But these are both rain-fed, unirrigated, unbunded fields, which are very subject to water stress in poor years. Phenotyping in detecting QTLs associated with improved performance under stress is very important. It's been known for a long time. This is the rice version of the slide you may have just seen 5 minutes ago in Ken Fisher's work. This is actually from John O'Toole's work looking at yield as opposed to peak stress period in rice. So right around flowering is the key moment. However, we've found that you can really characterize particular fields in the watershed or topo sequence in terms of the proportion of the season in which they're covered with standing water. And here we've got, I guess, about 40 fields in northeastern Thailand that have been rated on a weekly basis on a 1 to 3 scale as being fully flooded or having no standing water, averaged over the season. And you can see a very linear effect on grain yield of the proportion of time in the season in which there's water in the field. And a lot of the work on QTL analysis has been trying to focus on those those critical phenological moments. We were also very concerned with the situation that really seems to face farmers in the upper fields, which is just a periodic lack of water at any given stage in crop development, and we're trying to do selection and screening at both ends of that spectrum. And so this is transplant. This is developed into a stress screening protocol at Erie, where both for upland and lowland situations, we drain the fields or impose stress quite early at about 30 days after seeding or transplanting, or even earlier after transplanting, and then typically we'll drain the field and only re-irrigate when we get very dry conditions, water tensions of 50 to 70 kilopascals at 15 centimeters in an irrigated system, or about 30 centimeters at in an aerobic system, and then repeat the stress cycle. So we just repeat the stress cycle through the season and make sure everything gets hit, and then you get these periods of stress, cyclic stress, and hopefully all the materials in a mapping population will be affected over that stress cycle. We found that there's massive variation among different varieties in yields under stress. These are three upland varieties that we tend to use in upland experience as a stress differential set. And you can see that these varieties under non-stress conditions, they don't differ very much in flowering date. They differ substantially in flowering date under stress because flowering delay is a stress response. They're in the same ballpark in terms of non-stress yield. This is means over 3 years, but massively and consistently different in yield under stress. And so it's important to have these types of checks in your experiment to understand what happened. And we're focusing on crosses between things like this and things like this for genetic analysis. The conventional wisdom was that there were not large effect QTLs affecting yield under stress, under drought stress. We've been very excited by the experience in submergence tolerance breeding in rice and other abiotic stress breeding where, for instance, for submergence tolerance, there is a single QTL on chromosome 9, the sub-1 locus, which has a very large effect on tolerance. Are we able to find such loci? We had QTL envy, in drought tolerance, we're looking for this type of locus in drought. Are there loci that are big enough to be fine mappable and useful in mass, and do they act additively and across backgrounds? Was the question we started to try to look at over the last few years at Erie. So I'll just briefly run through the results of a couple of these studies. Cross between a short duration drought tolerant Eastern Indian upland variety Vandana from the Aus germplasm group with a high yield but very susceptible in terms of drought tolerance variety Y. rarum was screened under the stress protocol at Erie, the upland stress protocol at Erie in 2005 and in 2006. These are the results of two seasons. So we found that in this population in particular, the yield reduction due to the stress protocol was about 70%, as you can see here. Interestingly, the heritability, the broad sense heritability in this case was rather high under stress. And we find this, that if we're able to impose the stress repeatedly, the broad sense heritabilities are very high. You can do good selection for yield under stress. Typically, genetic correlations between yield under these different irrigation regimes are intermediate to high. There is some effective yield potential in yield under stress. And we did find one major QTL on chromosome 12 between these two markers, about 50 centimorgans in. So we don't have QTL envy anymore in this population in particular, and the effect of the, you know, this is the contrast between the homozygous classes. So about 100% yield improvement under stress for this locus. Small effect under non-stress conditions. Small effects on biomass, and harvest, a large effect on harvest index under stress. And interestingly, getting back to Matthew's point, the two homozygous classes for this particular allele do not differ significantly for flowering date under non-stress conditions, but differ substantially for flowering date under stress. So the flowering date difference here is a stress response. This is work you can find in Crop Science in January of this year. Jerome Bernier, graduate student working on this, has been looking at what is going on with this locus and finding that differences in vegetative biomass start to show up quite early, 60 to 70 days after seeding. So these things are probably accessing more water early on. If you look at the in the combined analysis for this particular locus, and you look at sources of variation, we find that the QTL variance accounts for about half of the total genetic variance. There's very little QTL by year interaction in this screening system. The R-square for the locus was about 0.34 in the experiment, and this is about 50% of the genetic variance. And so the proportion, and when you sort of use non-stress yield as a covariate, you find that this one locus seems to account for about 60% of the genetic variance that isn't associated with yield potential under severe stress. Unfortunately, it's an interesting story, and we're trying to find map, my successors there are trying to find map this now. The locus only works under upland conditions. Seems to help maintain transpiration throughout the cropping period. It's highly background specific. It doesn't seem to work when this donor is used with other crosses. We haven't found a major effect. Highly epistatic. It doesn't work. The allele for tolerance comes from the susceptible parent in this cross. So what are the breeding implications for this? I'm not sure. But we are finding similar loci in some other crosses. For example, in a lowland cross, which was evaluated for 2 years under severe stress by Ravindra Kumar at Indira Gandhi Agricultural University in Raipur, found a significant locus. This is near SD1 on chromosome 1, a large effect associated with this locus, no effect under non-stress conditions, and very little effect on phenology. So it's not only this locus, and a similar story in terms of the proportion of the phenotypic variant, the genetic variance about a third, and in fact in this case, this locus seems to account for a very large proportion of the non-yield potential related genetic variability. So these things do happen. We've identified about three such loci in different crosses right now. And so I would like to suggest that we should be focusing on these genes for drought tolerance and that yield in these rice mapping populations where we're looking at differences between highly susceptible and highly tolerant parents is something on the order of 20 to 50% associated with yield potential and phenology and just how the biomass is being packaged, and something between 50 and 80% under severe stress with specific factors that we can isolate. And often there's not that many, there seem to be two, three, four of these that are quite important. They're not going to be general across backgrounds. So in conclusion, significant genetic variability for yield under stress exists in rice. It's a moderately heritable trait for which direct selection is effective. That's been well shown in maize as well. In a well-conducted screen, the genotype by environment interaction seems to be very low for yield under stress. And to detect stress-specific QTLs, we have to screen populations from contrasting parents under both stress and non-stress conditions. We need to use non-stress yield and flowering data as covariates, and often the trait may be in a particular cross simpler than it looks. Progress is going to result from analyzing many tolerant bisusceptible crosses using selective genotyping approaches and focusing on loci with major effects. Thanks.
We have time for a question, so if anybody has any questions.
It seems like you've been able to control within field variability quite well because of your heritability score is very high under stress conditions. So any tips on that in-field uniformity, which is so hard to get sometimes?
I mean, in rice it's a little easier than in some other crops. I mean, in a lowland paddy, if the field is level, you just drain the paddy. But I mean, we replicate those heritabilities are over years, right? So there's we use good designs, neighbor analysis, and there's no secret to that. But what is interesting is that when you impose severe stress, the genetic differences get a little larger relative to the noise. But no, there's no secret. It's just what you'd figure.